Joanne Ozug, and you are listening to The Road to Carnivore, episode 20. In this episode, I'm going to share my personal experience with carnivore during pregnancy. And I'll just come right out and say that staying fully carnivore for me was not an option. And I mean that literally. Putting meat into my body and keeping it down was not possible for most of the first trimester and part of the second. And when this started happening, it was very distressing because I totally expected that I would have a fully carnivore pregnancy. Not just because I had been carnivore for nearly 2 years prior to getting pregnant, but also because there's this consensus on social media in the carnivore community that having completely carnivore pregnancies without issue is the norm. But what I found upon digging into the literature and also getting a sense of the personal experiences of hundreds of other carnivore women, not people working in the industry, but simply everyday people who happen to be following this diet, is that the vast majority of carnivore women also do not have a fully carnivore pregnancy. Dogmatic thinking is such a pervasive issue in the realm of diet and certainly in the carnivore community. It's also a pervasive issue in the context of pregnancy, because it's so natural to worry about doing everything perfectly for the health of your baby. And when you combine diet and pregnancy, the dogma can be a serious problem. And I notice this all the time in carnivore motherhood groups, and I noticed this in myself early on. I took it as incontrovertibly true that in order to have the healthiest pregnancy, I had to stay completely carnivore. So when it wasn't working, I really struggled and wondered what was wrong. But what I discovered is that not only is this experience really common, but meat aversions appear to be a protective element in pregnancy. So I recently gave birth to my third child, and while it was my third pregnancy overall, this was my first pregnancy since doing carnivore. And the abrupt end to my carnivore eating came about 5 weeks into the first trimester. I started to experience completely debilitating nausea, the kind where you feel like you're going to die and you can't even watch TV in bed. I was unable to work, unable to take care of the kids, unable to do really much of anything besides lay down with my eyes closed and pray for mercy. And initially, I was adamant that because carnivore was the healthiest way for me to eat, I would try to force myself to eat the meat anyway. I thought maybe I could douse my burger in ketchup or choke down some taco meat with rice and tortillas. No. Any forced attempts to eat meat resulted in being overruled by my body and all the food coming back up. And even when I stopped eating meat myself, I still couldn't bear the smell of it. It's the weirdest thing when you're used to eating meat for every single meal of the day, and then you get pregnant and merely the smell of it makes you gag. My husband had to completely take over the cooking for the kids because my food aversions were so severe. As the food aversions initially took hold, I started to wonder why I was having such a hard time eating meat and why so many women seem to have aversions to meat in particular. So I began doing some research, talking to people who work with women in the community, and reading what other carnivore women have shared in some of the Facebook groups. And what was interesting is I started picking up on some similarities in all of these different places that matched the experience I was having. There's a carnivore motherhood group on Facebook with about 4,000 women in it. And I read every single thread and poll and post about nausea, morning sickness, and food aversions. And what's interesting is that about 80% of the women experienced nausea and meat aversions, regardless of how long they had previously been doing carnivore. And this 80% also matched what I was reading in medical literature. About 80% of the general population of pregnant women experiences nausea and food aversion as well. Carnivore or not, it doesn't seem to matter. 80% of pregnant women have this experience. I had severe nausea with my first two pregnancies, so this wasn't completely unexpected. But because carnivore had changed so many facets of my health for the better, I sort of hoped that maybe I wouldn't experience it this time around. Carnivore fixes a lot of things, but nausea during pregnancy does not seem to be one of them. And there appear to be reasons for this, which I'll get to in a minute. When I went into my pregnancy, I was in a really good state of health. 2 months prior to getting pregnant, I got a full blood panel done and reviewed by a well-known and respected carnivore doctor. And he told me multiple times that my blood work was as good as it gets and that he doesn't blow smoke. So I was totally ready health-wise for this carnivore pregnancy. And despite that, I was just as sick this time as the previous two pregnancies. Part of why this was helpful for me is because I have the type of personality where I questioned if there was something I could have done differently to not have experienced nausea to the degree I did. But the answer seems to be no. And the fact that other women, even if they had been carnivore for a year prior, 2 years prior, or even more, that the same 80% of them were also sick, I started to think that the nausea likely has nothing to do with diet. While the cause of nausea in pregnancy is not definitively known, there are some broad hypotheses as to why it occurs. In one paper I linked to called Hyperemesis Gravidarum, a literature review, they say, because the great majority of pregnant women experience discomfort due to nausea and vomiting, a functional role of nausea and vomiting in pregnancy is often considered. It has been hypothesized that morning sickness protects the embryo by causing pregnant women to physically vomit and subsequently avoid foods that contain teratogenic and abortifacient chemicals, especially toxic chemicals in strong-tasting vegetables, caffeinated beverages, and alcohol. A couple words there I'll define quickly. Teratogenic means that the substance causes fetal abnormalities, and abortifacient means it causes miscarriage. And absolutely, there are known plant toxins that impact pregnancy in these ways, which doesn't surprise me in the broader context of plant toxins and how they affect the body. But I wondered, what about meat? What's wrong with the meat? I found that answer in another article I've linked to from Cornell, and they say about nausea and vomiting during pregnancy, the most observed aversion was to meats, fish, poultry, and eggs, the foods that were more likely to carry harmful microorganisms and parasites before the advent of modern refrigeration and food handling processes. This right here resonated with me as such an interesting point and felt so obvious after the fact. An aversion to the most parasitic foods during the delicate first trimester of pregnancy was likely very important and life-saving in a previous time when humans didn't have modern food handling and refrigeration. And though this is not relevant for most of us anymore, clearly our bodies don't know that. We may live in this modern world, but so much about our bodies is still very much ancient. An example that immediately comes to mind is everything about our lizard brains. Our lizard brains were protective and necessary during times of food scarcity for practically the entire span of time for the human race up until recently. But now in modern times, where many of us live with excess food abundance, this lizard brain survival mechanism isn't helpful anymore and leads to a lot of overeating. But this part of our biology won't change anytime soon because evolution just doesn't happen that quickly. Similarly, since humans did not have refrigeration for the vast majority of our history, psychological aversions to compensate likely aren't going to go away anytime soon either. One of the professors who co-authored the Cornell paper says the term morning sickness is a complete misnomer and that we should change the name to wellness insurance. In their findings in the paper, they say, women who experience morning sickness are significantly less likely to miscarry than women who do not. Women who vomit are significantly less likely to miscarry than those who experience nausea alone. Putting all of this together was helpful for me at the time because it invited a different perspective from where I initially was mentally, which was, what did I do wrong? And I considered that perhaps these aversions were actually a sign that all was well, as difficult as the nausea was. There's this assumption that nausea during pregnancy is a bad thing, a sign of something gone wrong. But as I read through papers on this topic, I actually think it's sensible to consider it as something gone right. Women who experience nausea during pregnancy have lower rates of miscarriage. This commonly experienced aversion to meats and carnivore foods was likely protective and necessary historically. Another aspect that I came across repeatedly in the medical literature is the idea that carbs might actually be necessary during pregnancy. In one paper I linked to titled Normal Pregnancy, A State of Insulin Resistance, they say that maternal insulin resistance leads to more use of fats than carbohydrates for energy by mother and spares carbohydrates for fetus. Thus, the development of insulin resistance serves as a physiological adaptation of the mother to ensure adequate carbohydrate supply for the rapidly growing fetus. At the end of the day, I am not sure if my need for carbs was because that's all that was left to eat after the meat aversions, or if it's because my body really needed carbohydrates specifically. My personal feeling is that it's more the latter, and there are scientific papers like this one that assert that to be true. All I can say is that I followed my body's signals and direction to the best of my ability, and even though I ordinarily think of carbs as unhealthy foods for my body, I actually don't know that eating them produced a less healthy outcome for my child. Pregnancy is such a wildly different state for the human body. Ultimately, I had a normal pregnancy with no complications and a healthy, thriving, strong baby, and I'm grateful to my body and its wisdom for guiding me there. So I've talked a lot about the first half of the pregnancy, but the second half was quite different. At 20 weeks, my nausea and meat aversions finally began to lift, and as that happened, my body started to reject the carby things I had been eating. I would eat crackers, for example, and start sneezing uncontrollably. My back started aching so badly that I couldn't walk. I was bedridden a lot of the time, and my husband would have to help me walk around because the inflammation was so bad. And so I started trying all these things to improve the pain, like chiropractor visits, massage, stretching, but none of those things were working to resolve the immobility and pain. But guess what did? Finally getting back to carnivore. Now, when I say I got back to carnivore, that transition was gradual and took much of that second trimester. I was still somewhat averse to meat, though I found that I could start having bits of it if I covered it up with other flavors. So I took it very slowly and followed my own motto for the road to carnivore, that the more meat you eat, the healthier you will be. So I would have a burger patty with some cheese and ketchup and half a bun. And then I was able to eventually get rid of the bun. Then as my nausea lifted completely, I could once again have just a plain grilled burger patty with salt. And that's when I started tracking carbs so I could get back to full carnivore. I really wanted to go cold turkey once my meat aversions were gone. My personality does best with all or nothing. But my midwife was concerned about me cutting carbs too quickly, and that was probably the right call to make sure I didn't cause distress to my child. So I started tracking carbs, capping at 100 grams a day, then 75 grams a day the next week, and then 50, and then eventually back down to just carnivore foods. And then at the very end of pregnancy, I stopped full carnivore and started adding carbs again. Around week 36, I started waking up pretty consistently at 3 in the morning, absolutely ravenous and unable to go back to sleep. I started adding some carbs to my meals in the evening, and consequently, the nighttime waking stopped. Even though I was eating as much meat as I could stomach at dinner, it wasn't enough to hold me overnight. I needed carbs again at that time to resolve that issue. The very end of pregnancy is a time of intense growth for the baby. Starting around week 36, you've got a 5 or 6 pound baby putting on a half pound per week. And I just want to point out how absurd that is. That's a huge proportional increase in size. My suspicion is that this tremendous demand for energy likely drove what I knew intuitively at the time, that either I and or my baby needed more than what I was able to get from meat alone. And that really points at one of the big takeaways from the pregnancy as a whole that I want to emphasize for the carnivore women listening who may become pregnant at some point. While we do know a lot about the human body through science, there's also a lot that we don't know cognitively, but that we do know intuitively. I think that's especially important during pregnancy. There's an incredible innate wisdom there. There is not a single day of pregnancy when I wake up and tell my body, hey, can you build an eyeball for my baby today? Maybe work in the pancreas a little bit too? No, I have absolutely no idea what's going on any given day. My body just creates a human being without any cognitive input whatsoever. This is amazing. And the best thing that I could do, and what I did do during the pregnancy, was try to read my body, listen as much as possible to my body's direction, and support my body in that way. Just because we don't understand the cause of the nausea, that doesn't mean that it's pointless. At one time, it was believed that 90% of our brain didn't do anything, that fascia didn't do anything, that junk DNA didn't do anything, that the appendix didn't do anything. We have since discovered that all of those actually do something, after all. The fact that nausea and meat aversions happen in the majority of pregnancies is evidence to me that there is a point, even if we don't definitively know why. Overall, I am so grateful for all that I learned during this pregnancy. And man, did it make me appreciate carnivore so much more than I already did. Because even though it was clear that relying on carbs during the period of nausea was the only choice I had, many of my previous health issues did return right along with it. The acid reflux, the constipation, the hemorrhoids, the inflammation. If I could have stayed carnivore for the entire pregnancy, then I absolutely would have. I do think it's a good idea to eat as much meat as you can for optimal pregnancy. This was notably the first pregnancy that I was not anemic toward the end, and I credit all the beef I was eating in that second half. But carnivore didn't work well for me for a lot of my pregnancy, and I had to remind myself that carnivore is not a religion. It's just something I do because it makes my health better, and it's okay that I had to do something different during the hormonally extraordinary state of growing a child with my body. So for anyone struggling with meat aversions and keeping carnivore during pregnancy, give yourself grace and remember that this is actually very normal and it won't last forever. Do the best you can to get by, to take care of yourself and your child, and leave the dogma, the expectations, and the distress behind. Eat what your body will tolerate and stay hopeful and vigilant as you watch for signals that you can return to carnivore once again. Thanks for listening to The Road to Carnivore. To stay in touch between podcast episodes, sign up for my email list. Oftentimes, I'll find fascinating studies or articles that aren't quite long enough to become an episode in the series, but are still really helpful for reinforcing carnivore, and my newsletter is the place I share those. I also share carnivore recipe ideas, teachings on how to improve your mindset, tips for having success on carnivore, and much more. Sign up on my website, theroadtocarnivore.com, or click the link in the show notes. I'll see you next time.